So I've invited Jim in here. We have about 15 minutes left. If I can go back and show you this picture. Okay, so Barry and his brother Steve, coming out of this church in Oakland, coming out of the church in Portland, initially they want to replicate what's being done for an annual ministers' meeting for music ministers in the church. And so, and this is the first time I've ever handled this invaluable historic document. No. This is the Northwest Music Ministers Conference, which is going to be associated, I think, with Dick Iverson's church.
Yeah, Howard Wachinski was the guy who put that together.
Yes. Him and his brother and some others, Larry Gipsy, I think, 1978 start a different thing called the International Worship Symposium. Okay? Which initially in its early years is small enough it could be held in sponsoring churches like we are here. Let's imagine IWS all of a sudden grows to 1,500 students. Well, you're going to have to find a different venue. That's what happens with the IWS. And so very quickly they have to move to university settings. Oral Roberts, Duquesne, that sort of thing. And by and large, there's a certain very talented musician from Oklahoma that they begin to tap to help lead workshops at the International Worship Symposium. And so, what I actually want to do, I want to ask Jim kind of his perspective on this whole thing, the impact of it, and then I have scanned, because I got from another IWS student, Bob Johnson, multiple copies of these. I have scanned the 1985 one that lists Jim, and I thought we might just scroll through it and let Jim comment on it and think. So stand up and begin talking any place you want to.
So my initial exposure to that, I was in that a little different stream than the Latter Ratio. I was in the stream called the Word of Faith movement. So it was Tulsa's kind of ground zero for the Word of Faith movement with Rhema Bible Training Center there. So our pastor has been a Rhema graduate professor, so we had that kind of background. Although we work hardcore blab it and grab it sort of Word of Faith. But our music minister there is Daniel Amstutz, and Daniel's written up actually the complete library. Daniel and Pastor Bob Dandy for their influence in the early days of the praise and worship movement. So we had at that church we had another summer issue called the local church music seminar. And I'll talk to you about this later on. But what we were bringing in people like this, folks like Roger Lynn of Lynn Drums and Ray Kurzweil. Phil Driscoll doing these seminars, and Phil would bring in all these techno guys. Christian or not Christian, it didn't matter, but he'd bring them in to do these things. We did the first ever, to my knowledge, Rick Powell was part of that. So Rick Powell and was at that time he was selling personal composers. So we did this thing where we set up a keyboard using personal composer. They had it for Mac and for an IBM computer. So at this time, these computers could not talk to each other at all. There was no interface between Mac and IBM. So we figured there actually was through MIDI. So we set up a MIDI connection from the Mac to the keyboard, and then from the keyboard to my PC. And we were able to create a sequence on the Mac, play it to the keyboard, record it on the PC, and play it back exactly the same way. So we saw that these two could actually talk to each other. That was kind of cool in that fact. But no, so symposium, 1983, I wasn't part of this group, the Latter Rain Movement symposium group, but we heard about what was going on, that there was something happening there. So Daniel, I was on staff as his orchestra director, and he said, let's go to Pasadena and see what's going on. So we all traipsed out to Pasadena, including my pastor, and we go to Pasadena Community College for a symposium in 1983, and I met Barry and Steve there, and David Fisher and Larry Dempsey, became friends with those guys, and next thing you know, they wanted to have the next one in Tulsa, where we live. So we became the host church for it. clean. So Larry Dempsey came and had an office at our church for 4 or 5 months and was establishing the symposium. And then started asking us to teach in the symposium. Being an orchestra director, my role was always teaching either trumpet or brass techniques or orchestration or arranging or things like this, all practical sort of classes. So the 1985 symposium, I was at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. And this is where I met Bob Johnson. Bob was also a member of the Alpha class at IWS. So Bob was here. Bob was music director, I think, this year, and then I took over the music director the following year of the symposium. So Bob's teaching some classes here. I'm doing some classes in here. Want me to comment on the actual people that are listed?
Yeah.
So you may have recognized the name Jesse Peterson. He was the founding dean of the school of music, the grad school of music at Virginia Beach, Regent in Virginia Beach. Jim Gilbert is still a great missionary and evangelist, lives now in Florida. He and a guy named Larry Dalton were very influential in missions. Also was a group called Living Sound. Living Sound's where Don Moen got his start. So Don Moen and Jim Gilbert were very close friends. They traveled behind the Iron Curtain, became very good friends with St. John Paul II through those interactions. Back then, Carol Wojtyła was flying below the radar, trying to survive in communist Poland. And Jim Gilbert and Don Moen were making inroads with him, and he gave them a carte blanche, do whatever you want to do. Spread the gospel any way you possibly can. So that's Jim Gilbert. I traveled to Soviet Union with Jim years ago. Janet Schell is a phenomenal violinist, currently still working down in Central Florida, and still playing and teaching with people.
And she's from Findlay. I forget the name of the pastor and the influential church that was there in Findlay.
I think that was her dad, but yeah. I can't remember the name of the church either. But Janet was in a school of about, I think, something like 200 students, and 120 of them were in the orchestra that she put together. And so she was teaching. She was holding kids in her lap and teaching them violin, which is a major musician. Lamar Bosch, you probably heard that name before. He had a series of seminars. I can't think what they were called right now. Anybody remember? I don't know. Lamar worked, he's now at Christ for Nations in Dallas doing some adjunct professor work at Christ for Nations.
And he will soon be instituting his own International Worship Institute.
Oh, that's what it's called, Worship Institute.
Which will morph into the Worship Institute, which has stronger Integrity Hosanna connections than these.
Yes, right.
Than the International Worship Symposium does.
Yeah, so Lamar is one of those guys that's kind of on the fringe of this movement, but he had the Worship Institute going for years. And Don Moen used to be one of his main speakers at the Worship Institute. And he was based out of Dallas, then I believe. I think it was out of Dallas. Mm-hmm.
Still lives there now, because I interviewed him on July 6th.
Yeah.
Jesse Peterson, by the way, was one of the guys that really promoted the Thanksgiving praise worship. I mean, he wrote about it, he taught about it, and he modeled it. Right. He really pushed that.
Right. Also had a strong Oral Roberts connection, too. Iona Glacier came out of David Fisher's church, I think, Living Waters in Pasadena. Again, her daughter came to IWS and did a doctorate at IWS. I know who Charlotte Baker is. I can't tell you anything about her, but I think she was associated with Fuchsia Pickett's church called Fountain Gate in Plano, Texas. I believe Charlotte Baker was in Fountain Gate.
And I just got her book on Wings of Eagles.
Okay. And that's also where Steve Griffin was, at Fountain Gate Church in Plano, Texas. And they had a school, they had a college there as well. I taught there. I taught arranging and conducting for their school. We used to go watch the Dallas Symphony and watch the conductor and go back and critique them. Right. Fuchsia Pickett was the pastor of that church in Dallas area. David Fisher, one of the four directors of the whole worship symposium, along with the two Griffin brothers and Larry Dempsey. Larry Dempsey, by the way, died at Grace Episcopal Church, where IWS used to be. It was during Bob Johnson's wedding weekend. I introduced Bob to his wife, who's a part member of mine, at Grace Episcopal. So they got married at Grace. They had seven clergy involved with this wedding, including Steve Edgar and Griffin both. And Larry Dempsey was the preacher. So he came to rehearsal, went back to the hotel, and had a major heart attack and died in the hotel the night of the rehearsal. We found out about it at the rehearsal dinner. So Sam Pascoe, some of you may remember Sam Pascoe, the director of Grace Episcopal, seeing Sam and I went over and gave Larry last rites at the hospital. But that happened right at Orange Park, so all kinds of Orange Park connections. Sam Sasser, I didn't really know him, but he was another big theological figure within the symposium group. Bob Sorge, a lot of you know Bob Sorge, the Elam Bible Institute guy. He's rather, I think, still pretty well known.
Right. He's now at an IHOP in Kansas City.
Oh, is he? Okay. All right. I didn't know that.
And very nice enough to provide an endorsement for Loving on Jesus.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's right.
Or is it praise?
What's that?
Just the IHOP. Right?
Mike and Debbie and Hibbert from Museum were all, I didn't know them very well, but they were around all the time.
Yeah.
Larry Dempsey, his big song was called Lords of the Lamb. Glory, glory, glory. He was a bit of a one-hit wonder, but he was one of the four leaders of the symposium around the whole town. I know Greg Muir, but I don't know anything about him. And Barry, as you've already noticed, is in South California, Southern California.
So what's the impact generally of the International Worship Symposium? What's its importance in all of this teaching and?
You asked me that question at breakfast, and I've thought about it some, and I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
So I think the overall impact of this was what you mentioned in the beginning of your talk, which is also what Bob Johnson wrote about when he first came here, and that was a recovery of a sense of sacramentality, in a positive way. There was a recovery of the sense that God is truly immanent. Sometimes the transcendence may have been a little bit lost, but the image was always there. And an expectation that God would be, was not only present, but was seen in the world around us. Which harkens back to the patristics, really. All the church fathers had that sacramental view of the world.
But these guys are not any patristics.
No, they're not. They're not. And so for them, it's there's a sense of sacramentality that's coming forward in terms of how they go about encountering God. It just hadn't gone through any kind of theological formation in terms of, and quite often, as Dan Backens mentioned, quite often it got rooted in how we were feeling about the glory of God being manifested. And so the ontology of the thing was sort of lost. It was all based on how we feel about what's going on, right? I mean, that was a very prominent part of that. So But that sacramentality was important because the whole evangelical movement was all based on rationality. And so bringing back the sense of sacramentality, had a major influence in that way, getting people to actually experience the reality of God sacramentally present in the world.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, and if God is sacramentally present, then we surely should be able to sense Him in some way. And that's
thank you very much.